across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web. VeteransRadio.org is our new URL, VeteransRadio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to VeteransRadio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio now Randy Howard. She's a Navy veteran, originally from Chicago, but we're going to have her on to talk about her work at the War Horse. But let's talk a little bit about Randy before we get there. Randy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hello, thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, I'm going to ask you, as I did earlier, hey, how did a nice girl like you from Chicago end up at the United States Navy?
Yes. So I was actually the first person in my family to join the military. My mother is an immigrant from Belize, and I really felt a great sense of responsibility to really pursue opportunities and different avenues that that just aren't afforded in other countries that are as developed as America. And also during that time, I also felt that I was in a very stagnant place in my life. I was just going to school part-time because I couldn't afford a full-time education, and I was working part-time as well at a grocery store as a general collecting carts. And I just wanted a change. I wanted a change, and I wanted to make my mother proud, and I didn't want her move from her home country to be in vain. So I decided to enlist in the United States Navy.
Well, it's, you know, it's one of those things where we're having a military recruiting slump at the moment because not enough young people getting out of high school are looking at the military as a, you know, maybe a short-term stop. As you say, things were kind of stagnant. You really didn't have the funding to go to college. You wanted to. You were a high school graduate, and you were able to put 4 years into the United States Navy, and from there kind of springboard your life and your career. Let's talk a little bit about those 4 years in the Navy. What rating did you go in as?
Yeah, when I enlisted, I was an aircraft electrician on helicopters.
And that's because you had such a desire to do so?
Yeah. No, actually, when I was reviewing the different rates that are available in the military, I actually wanted to do intel, and I expressed to my recruiter my interest to join in the intel community. And my recruiter is not the individual, or the recruiter is not the individual that that presents you with the job. So she told me that, because she couldn't be in the room with me. So she told me when I went in there to speak to someone else about the different jobs that are available in the Navy, do not tell them that I'm ready to leave immediately, because they're going to offer me a job that they need filled for whatever purposes that they need filled for the day. And I completely did not listen to my recruiter. And because I was...
The job available was...
The job available was aviation electrician. And because I told them, oh, I'm ready to go immediately. And when I say, this is it, like, this is the only thing available, they say yes. And they told me I couldn't leave without picking a job. So that's how I ended up in maintenance.
Well, it's not all bad. There's more to the story here, folks. Continue to listen to Randy Howard of the War Horse. But I think almost everybody who's been in the military has had one of those assignments like, I didn't ask for that. So it wasn't all bad, as I say, because you got to spend a good deal of your time in San Diego, California.
Yes. I love California. Absolutely love California. It's just very exciting to be there.
Well, the part of this is, again, for our listeners, you know, this is a young woman who came out of Chicago. The winters in Chicago, my friends, are brutal. So cold and windy. San Diego's was a pleasant surprise, I suspect.
Yes, and it was my first time on the West Coast as well. I absolutely fell in love with California.
But you didn't spend all of your time in California, dockside, if you will. You deployed. Tell us about your deployment.
Yes. USS Macon Island, which is an amphibious assault ship that holds Navy and Marines. And I deployed with the 11th MEU. And the deployment was about a year long.
And you got to go through the Southeast Asia and Middle East. Tell us some of those spots you got to put into port.
Oh, yes, yes. So our area of responsibility during that time was mostly Yemen and Djibouti, Africa. But on deployment, on the way there, we did spend some time in 7th Fleet. We went to Hong Kong and Singapore. And then when we got to 5th Fleet, which was more Yemen and Djibouti, Africa, we did get to port in Bahrain and Dubai, and then our last stop was Hawaii.
This is the quintessential advertisement for the Navy, which is, you know, join the Navy, see the world, and you really got a good look of very interesting cities and locations all over the world, from a lot different than Chicago, Illinois. But tell us a little bit, for those who haven't spent time on ship, tell us a little bit about maybe the best and the thing and maybe the toughest challenges.
Yes, that is a good question. So I would say the best times definitely were the ports. When when we ported to Singapore, I got a fish pedicure, and I don't even know how I knew to get a fish pedicure in Singapore. I really don't know how I knew that, but when I heard we were going to Singapore, I said, oh, I'm going to get a fish pedicure. That was in like 2016, and I still go back and I look at that video. And then also, like, the people that I deployed with overall was a good group, and supposed to, but we snuck a George Foreman onto the ship, and we would cook spam and rice, and we would all eat together when the ship food was not as appetizing as we wanted it to be.
Absolutely. And one of the other things you learn, having been on ship myself, is when you get in the middle of the ocean, it is big and dark and at times pretty scary.
Yes, I would definitely say that was one of the most challenging parts of deployment for me, especially because I worked the overnight shift. So it was just pitch black, and it was a lot more windy too in the night as well. And you really had to, they like to say, keep your head on a swivel and really pay attention to what's happening on the flight deck, especially when flight ops are still happening late into the night. And you just have to pay attention to your surroundings and the edges. Everything's chained. So you really just have to make sure that that you're just really paying attention, because things can go left pretty quickly.
Yeah, and you used those experiences as an aviation electrician. When you got out, you had a technical writer job for General Atomics Aeronautical Systems for a little bit before going in San Diego area, before going to Columbia University Urban Studies, where you picked up your bachelor's degree. Tell us about that migration from the West Coast over to Columbia University.
Oh my gosh, that was really hard. Because New York City and California are completely night and day. And I was not expecting that. I wasn't prepared for that at all. But that was tough because New York, it's not, the weather is not the same. It's nice in the summer. Very, very more culture. A lot more culture in New York. I really appreciated that. But it gets pretty cold there as well. And it's just a lot. This is a lot, a quicker pace, quicker pace than California. Like, California is very slow and chill and like relaxed, and New York is very, very busy. And so I had to adjust to that, and the parking and the rest.
Yeah, both. Well, you participated in the Military Veterans Association at the university. But one of the interesting things that you did, and it's going to tie into what we're going to talk about here shortly, is you participated mm-hmm. in tutoring women in a nonfiction writing program. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, that was actually one of my most rewarding experiences during my time at Columbia. How that came about, I was actually trying to start my own prison book program. I was volunteering at one in Brooklyn. Columbia is in Manhattan, and Brooklyn is not close. And the commute was longer than the volunteer time at the prison book program in Brooklyn. And so I was trying to start my own, and my guidance counselor recommended me to the Center for Justice at Columbia, and they actually presented me with this opportunity, saying that, I know you were trying to start a prison book program, but this is already established and you can work with books, and you can still serve the same population that you were previously intending to serve. And that was how I got involved. And I would go to Rikers every Friday evening and tutor the women at Rosie's that participated in the course. And it was definitely a very rewarding experience that I won't forget. And unfortunately, COVID cut the program short, but it was very, very.
There must have been something that was sort of gnawing at you to say, this is a valuable tool for folks here. What was it? Did you have a lot of writing or in your background, or where did this seed germinate from?
That is a great question. I just how the prison book program, I was just looking for somewhere to volunteer, and I just so happened to come across that. And then when I started getting more involved in the Center for Justice, a lot of the staff there are formerly incarcerated, and I just had some of the most productive conversations that I've had since I got out of service. And I just really delved deep into that space. And then one of my professors, Professor Geraldine Downey, I took a lot of her courses that also incorporated risk factors and incarceration restorative justice practices that also contributed to that experience.
Well, it's really interesting, because if you open yourself up to a new experience, right, going to Columbia first off, joining the Navy was this new experience. Going to Columbia was this new experience. Saying, I want to help this particular population through a writing course is sort of a new experience. And that kind of, I suspect, led you to the War Horse News, where you're at now. Tell us about the War Horse.
Yes, the War Horse. Amazing. We are a nonprofit newsroom that focuses on military and veteran issues. And so we have two components of the War Horse. We have the newsroom side, where we do a lot of investigative journalism. And then the side that I'm most involved in are our writing seminars. And so my main responsibility with the War Horse is I plan writing seminars that help produces stories that relate to different topics that we want to highlight to bridge the military and civilian gap.
So I'm going to focus on that in a moment, but I want to go back and let our veteran radio listeners know we're talking to Randy Howard, who is the operations associate for the War Horse. And if you're not familiar with that website, go to thewarhorse.org. There's always interesting information there. It will go way beyond what you see in the general press, and I think that's the real value of having somebody concentrate in this area, particularly at this time. So talk to us a little bit about the writing seminars and experiences that you're particularly focusing on, Randy.
Yes. So when I joined the War Horse, we were on our fifth writing seminar. And so that seminar was for military spouses. And my manager, Samantha Dave, she really guided me that first seminar and really trained me on finding a venue location, and all of the logistics around planning the writing seminars. We have an instructor that comes in. His name is David Christinger, who's also a professor at the University of Chicago's Policy School that designed this curriculum to help individuals tell their stories. And then we also have journalists and editors and different individuals from the journalism industry come in and volunteer their time and work with the fellows to really help them craft their stories and put their thoughts onto the paper on the story that they're trying to tell about military service. And so that was my first seminar that I first had experience with. And then the one after that was for Gold Star children and siblings, which for those that don't know, that is for individuals that lost a parent or a sibling to war or war related health issues. And that was the first seminar that I actually planned majority on my own and fully led that seminar.
And as you've watched to a couple of these now, and we're going to talk about one that's coming up, but as you focus or watched a couple of these, what did you get out of it, and what do you see the participants of the seminars getting out of it?
Yes, absolutely. I think that the most rewarding part for me is just seeing the growth of the fellows. A lot of them, when they come, they're very nervous. A lot of them, we try to have different writing experience levels to make it more inclusive. And even the ones that have writing experience levels, they're still a little nervous. But a lot of them just come very scared and just very closed. And by the end of the week, they're so relaxed and they're just a completely different person, and the piece that they write in such a short amount of time is so moving and so thoughtful and just so informative to the specific cohort about how military and service can impact an individual, whether they directly served or indirectly served.
Yeah, it's really kind of an extension of there's a lot of veteran writing programs therapeutically. Hey, the best way to express your feelings maybe for some people is to write it down. Some of it's to say out loud, but writing allows you to capture it and refine it and choose the right word. I mean, do you see folks go through that process?
Yes. They go through that process with the instructor in a group setting, and then they also have one-on-one settings as well with the mentors that volunteer their time.
And these writing seminars seem to be sort of have a focus. So I see one that was for medics and corpsmen. You mentioned the military spouses and the Gold Star children. There have been one for just women veterans, veteran families. Is that the idea, is to always have some sort of theme or natural relationship among those participating?
Yes. So the main goal for the writing seminar, we like to say that we're giving the underserved and the underrepresented an opportunity to tell their stories. And so to just avoid just like a very general seminar, we really sit down as a team and discuss cohort themes. And so and I'm very excited for 2024. Because we have one coming up this spring in April for incarcerated veterans at San Quentin, and we're doing that in partnership with San Quentin News and the Marshall Project. And then this fall, which I'm also very excited about as well, will be specifically a writing seminar for Black veterans.
Yeah, I think that's what caught my eye when was notice of the upcoming program in the fall for Black veterans to participate in a writing seminar and try to capture some of the history that they have through their service. If somebody's interested in that, how do they let you know, and kind of what's it cost, and what are the logistics?
All of our seminars are free. We cover lodging, travel, and expenses for the week. So they don't have to pay anything to participate in our seminars. And in order to apply, you just go to the warhorse.org, and we do have a writing seminars tab. And you can subscribe to our newsletter to stay up to date on when the application opens. We have a formal application process that you can apply online, and then we go through our criteria and our selection process. We notify all of the individuals that apply. With the goal, our goal is to receive more applications than available spots. And then once we make the selections, we announce the cohort on the website. We announce the mentors. We announce the venue, and then we take care of everything for everyone that participates in our seminars.
So, for example, when you're planning the seminar in the fall of 2024 for Black veterans to come in and participate in this writing seminar, how many folks can you take into the program?
Yes, that's actually a good question. So it varies by the venue, because most of the time we try to find a venue that can at least accommodate all of the fellows. So it really varies by the venue size and also funding as well.
Sure.
So we've had cohorts. Normally, like the average is 12. We normally have 12 fellows. In the past, we've had 8, but then this cohort in the spring for incarcerated veterans is a little different. But we're actually going to have our largest cohort. We expect to have 25 veterans.
Yeah, that's a little different. They've already got housing arranged and location arranged. And no one from outside's applying to get in. So yeah, that's a different group. So but a very worthwhile project. Now, does the materials that they write, does Warhorse then take some of them and post them online if they achieve that quality you're looking for?
Yes. So we don't we the goal is for them to publish with us, but there's no obligation for fellows to publish with us, and they can choose to publish with whoever they would like to publish with, or they can choose to not publish at all. But the goal of the writing seminars is for them to write a piece that they can publish with us, and we pay for them to publish their piece with us, and then we add it to our collection of of writings that that's helping to bridge the military and civilian divide and bring more awareness about what's happening in the military space.
Well, I got to say, it's a great program. I'm a big fan of the War Horse. I encourage veteran radio listeners to go to thewarhorse.org. If you're interested in the writing seminar, click on that. There's been over 70 War Horse fellows in the writing program. Yes. Now, most of them have been female. 75-76% have been female. Come on, guys. Don't be afraid of expressing your feelings here. Naturally, the Army's been leading that charge, but the Navy's in there with a solid 6%, the Marines at 12 and the Air Force at 23. So I need to see some more Navy guys get involved here. But we're talking to Randy Howard. She's the Operation Associate for the War Horse, who's explaining not only her military career, But this great program by the War Horse, this writer's program. Randy, when does the application process start for the fall?
Yes, so applications for the fall will open in late August, possibly early September. We're still finalizing the dates because the spring seminar is quickly approaching, but definitely by early September the applications will be open.
Okay, folks, mark it on your calendar. Randy Howard, U.S. Navy veteran, we really appreciate you spending some time with Veterans Radio today to tell us about this great program and about your service. So we appreciate this, the time you have for us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. This is the first time I've ever done anything like this, and it was such a great experience.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We would again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Prescorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.